Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Hey, warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Awfully glad you joined me today. I'm just excited about what's going on in the program today. We've got Rob Bluey from the Daily Signal going to be on the program in just a couple of minutes. We're going to have a great show, so you're going to want to stay put. If you're just climbing into your car, drive safe. I hope you've had a good day at work. I hope you've got some nice things planned for this evening, and I hope you found time in your day to connect with the Lord, to find time to be alone with Him, to open your Bible, and to pray, and to offer Him the praise and worship that He deserves. We're going to talk to Laura Lynn Hughes today as well, which is an easy name for me to remember because my two oldest sisters are Laura and Lynn, so that should be an easy one for me. And then Jonathan Parnell is going to be in the studio coming up a little bit later. And then my friend Tom Berkowitz is going to be with us as well in the second hour, because the evening tonight is the beginning of Yom Kippur, and Tom's going to talk about, from a Jewish perspective, what it means and how we can understand it better. That's all ahead on the show today, so I'm awfully glad you're with me. I'll take a little break and be back with Rob Bluey in just a minute.
Money is a necessity for all of us, but maybe you need help managing the financial resources God has entrusted to you. If you want to get smart with your money using biblical financial principles, enter to win two tickets to a special live event with financial expert Dave Ramsey. It's Smart Money Live in the Twin Cities, Monday, October 29th. Faith Radio with Tejas Financial Group in Wilmer, Minnesota, is giving away 25 pairs of tickets. Enter to win at myfaithradio.com.
It's been said that the only thing that is constant is change. When there are programming changes here at Faith Radio, we want you to know. You can easily stay informed through our ministry updates page at myfaithradio.com. You can also learn about upcoming events and current giveaways and see the latest trending articles. Access Faith Radio ministry updates under the About tab at myfaithradio.com.
To the show. Rob Bluey is editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal, and he is a regular guest on the show. I always look forward to our conversations, and he's with us now. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Bill. It's good to be with you.
Thank you so much. As always, I appreciate your wisdom and insight. Being in Washington, D.C., you're sort of a first responder to what's going on, and I appreciate getting your wisdom. So thanks so much for doing the show again. Let's talk about the latest, which is all over the headlines everywhere, and that's the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh and some of the accusations that have come forward and what we might expect with all of that.
Well, it certainly is big headlines here in Washington and across the country. What seemed to be a smooth confirmation process, they were planning to vote this week. He was all set to be on the court by October 1st. Certainly blew up over the weekend when you had this accusation come out from somebody who was speaking about an incident that she alleges happened when they were in high school more than 30 years ago. And it's created a situation where Republicans in the U.S. Senate have really responded to some of the concerns from their fellow senators to hear the accusations firsthand. Senator Chuck Grassley, who leads the Judiciary Committee, has scheduled a hearing for Monday at 10 a.m. in which both Judge Kavanaugh and his accuser will have an opportunity to testify. And from that, we'll see what that brings. I mean, I think a lot of his fate will be riding on how he is able to address some of the questions and what she brings forward in her testimony. At this point, though, Bill, I think it's important to note that neither the Democrats nor the accuser are cooperating. She has not agreed to testify on Monday. They've invited her. The lawyer has not responded to the contact from Senator Grassley, and the Democrats are refusing to participate in some of the background calls to collect information to update the file. So it's really curious that despite their calls to delay the hearing and obviously or delay the vote, they're not willing to participate in the hearing. I suspect that will change, but I'm just find it curious that they're taking that approach this far.
Is it even possible for the accuser to be judged fairly?
I don't know how you move forward with a hearing. I mean, obviously you can move forward with a hearing in which the senators ask just Judge Kavanaugh questions based on media accounts, but that's not ideal. I mean, I think what you would normally have is you would have a morning – you'd have a hearing at 10 a.m. in which the first witness would be the accuser, in this case, Christine Blasey Ford. She would state her case, the accusations, and then you would have Judge Kavanaugh respond to those accusations and questions from the senators. If you don't have a situation where one of them doesn't appear, it obviously makes it all the more difficult to get to the bottom of this and discern who's telling the truth. So I really don't know, Bill. This is kind of new territory. Obviously, we've been here before with Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, but things were obviously handled slightly differently, and the accusations were obviously not 30-plus years old in that case.
Yeah, and Brett Kavanaugh said this just didn't happen.
Oh, absolutely.
And, I wondered, he's probably been vetted, what, four times by the FBI?
He's been vetted six times by the FBI. He's had the highest rating you can possibly get from the American Bar Association, which is hardly a conservative outfit. In fact, the American Bar Association, in its evaluation of Judge Kavanaugh, spoke directly about his integrity. In fact, one of the lead evaluator said, and I'm going to quote him now, he said he enjoys an excellent reputation for integrity and is a person of outstanding character. This evaluator testified before the Senate on this account. So, he has a long, distinguished record. I mean, there's a number of things out there. It's why you have the Carrie Severino of the Judicial Confirmation Network saying something doesn't add up here. There's just something that seems out of sorts.
Yeah, obviously it's a timing thing. And do you think the Democrats are using her to just try to slow the thing down and try to get it derailed?
Oh, there's no doubt that the Democrats are using this to advance a political agenda. I mean, that's clear in the comments that Senator Schumer has made. That's clear in the fact that they sat on this for 6 weeks and waited until it was the most opportune moment politically to release this information. It's how it all came out. I mean, it was the Democrats seem to disregard her wish for confidentiality within a couple of days. What was going to be handled as a private matter with the FBI all of a sudden became a media firestorm. And so I think this is one of the concerns about next Monday's hearing. How do you avoid this becoming a media circus and at the same time try to get to the bottom so that U.S. senators can make a vote based on what they've been able to discern?
Does it help that approximately 65 women came out in support of Brett Kavanaugh, who knew him at the time, who spoke of his tremendous character and what a great guy he was?
I think that certainly does, including some women who dated him in high school. Mm-hmm. So obviously people who had they were more than just friends. They were girlfriends, and they were people who knew Kavanaugh really well. In all of those cases where we've heard these accounts of not only people who knew him in high school, but women whom he's interacted with throughout his career, you've heard nothing but praise, and even from family friends. I mean, people who just the quotes I've seen, are just really tremendous person that we're talking about here, which is why I think in the absence of having character witnesses at next week's hearing. In the court of public opinion, at least, it's really important for Judge Kavanaugh to have people out there who are defending him because, Bill, as you and I know, it's not like the Supreme Court nominee is going to go do a media tour of his own. He's not going to show up on the nightly news and start doing interviews. That's just not how these things are handled. So in the absence of him defending himself in the press. These other people are in a way acting as surrogates who can talk on his behalf.
Rob, if you would, talk about the partisanship, what's going on right now with the Supreme Court selection. I mean, it's was Scalia 98-0 or what? I mean,
he was, yes. And now, unbelievable, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I think even Ruth Bader Ginsburg has joined in that the partisanship has gotten a little too much.
She did. I thought that was really interesting, some comments. Obviously, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, somebody whom the left really idealizes, you know, for her leadership and her long tenure on the Supreme Court. She is somebody who consistently votes with the liberal bloc of justices on the court. But when she was recently interviewed at a George Washington University law school event, this was just days before the accusations came to light, she called the Kavanaugh confirmation process a highly partisan show and described it as wrong. She said that she was able to get that vote of 96-3, including many, many Republicans, despite her spending 10 years litigating cases for the ACLU, which, again, you know, in many cases would be values that Republicans are opposed to. So we have – things have changed significantly. A lot of it started with Robert Bork and Clarence Thomas, and we've reached now a point where these nominations, and not just for the Supreme Court, but across the board, are you know, partisan showdowns. And I think that's unfortunate. And in many cases, it seems that it's the Democrats who are willing – to go to these extremes here, and that's creating a situation, Bill, where I think you're going to have fewer and fewer people who are of good character who want to subject themselves to the scrutiny and the intensity of what comes with a confirmation process like this one.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Rob Bluey. He's editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. He's also probable owner of a red cape and knows where all the phone booths are in the Washington, D.C. area. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. My guest is Rob Bluey, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. You go to dailysignal.com to read more about Rob and all the fine writers that he has at the Daily Signal. Rob, let's talk about the Hurricane Florence aftermath and how political is that getting?
Well, yes. I mean, on numerous levels. I think on the you know, macro level, I mean, obviously there's these wild claims that this is all the result of climate change, as if we've never had hurricanes before. We can deal with that. On a more micro level, I mean, certainly anything that President Trump touches or does, and he's been very aggressive when it comes to hurricane preparedness in this case, you know, is a subject that brings out the partisans on both sides. So obviously, as this storm was barreling down on the Carolinas, there was you know, the news about Puerto Rico. Obviously, a year ago, Puerto Rico had this, you know, terrible hurricane strike the island, and it was incredibly difficult due to the infrastructure there to save lives. And President Trump, in a dispute with the press over how many lives were lost. Well, in this case, you have another situation where, you know, there obviously has been the tragic loss of life, and my personal thoughts and prayers go out to all those individuals who are suffering, mm-hmm. and have lost loved ones. But it's really sad that when these things turn into political debates, and we really just I think it, you know, in many cases, Bill, it's a moment to highlight the good work that's done at the local level in many cases by churches and civic organizations and those local leaders who step forward in a time of crises and really bring out the best of the American spirit.
Mm-hmm. Rob, let's talk about the September 30th spending deadline. And is there going to be a shutdown?
There still could be, but it's looking increasingly unlikely. You have a situation with it's quite interesting. So Republicans, despite controlling both the House and the Senate and the White House, you would think would be in firm control of the spending process. Mm-hmm. Now, they have moved forward more appropriations bills this year than I think they have in over a decade. So, I mean, they have made steady progress. The problem is that a lot of the priorities that this White House has, namely building a border wall, are not included in the spending bills. And so you have a situation where President Trump is willing to accept basically spending for the entire government except for the Department of Homeland Security, which the Congress will punt until after the election. And I don't know how President Trump is going to get his priorities in a lame duck Congress, but perhaps there's some scenario where that might work out. But I think what you're going to have is another disappointed president who is again going to come up short when he gets the money to build the border wall. You will have most of the rest of the government funded, including the Department of Defense. It'll be reassuring for the leaders of the Pentagon to have a full year of funding, whereas in the past years they've often had to deal with, you know, 3 or 6 month increments. But Bill, you know, I mean, I don't know how clear the American people could have been on this issue. They want to see immigration solved. This is one way that the president has proposed doing it. I mean, it was certainly a referendum that he put to the American people, and yet you have the leaders in Washington who are unable to come to any sort of an agreement and work with him on this particular topic.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, Rob. You know, another interesting thing that I've seen gain some momentum is this walk away movement. This thing is growing and getting bigger by the day, and they've got a big rally planned, I think, coming up. Is it this month or early next month, closer to the midterms?
Right.
When is that? And tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, so just to take a step back, because they may not have heard of Walk Away before. We've done some stories on the Walk Away movement at the Daily Signal, and the response has just been really phenomenal, including telling the stories of these individuals who have walked away from both the Democratic Party and the leftist ideology that it's come to represent. And what they're going to be doing is having a rally in Washington, D.C., and their goal is to bring together people who identify with this cause and who have very literally walked away and tell their story about why they've done it and hopefully draw media attention and attract others. So the march and the rally will be held on Saturday, October 27th. It's going to start near the Democratic National Committee headquarters on Capitol Hill and then head to the U.S. Capitol, which is not too far away. It happens, you know, literally 10 days before voters head to the polls for the midterm election. And you have individuals out there like Brian Stratka, who, you know, says that they have over 370,000 people who have joined this campaign. Mm-hmm. So in much the same respects, you had the Tea Party, you had Occupy Wall Street. This is one of those organic movements that seems to be popping up there in the country, and people are identifying with it.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. Rob, does President Obama, when he is out doing some campaigning, is that energizing the Republicans? Is it helping the Democrats? I see they're not using him in any TV ads. What's your take on that?
I think it's one of those situations where there probably are certain segments of the Democratic Party or the left-wing coalition that do identify with President Obama. Certainly, African-American voters tend to be really energized by his message and for good reason as the first black president. But there are certainly others who don't feel that Obama went nearly far enough. He doesn't you know, obviously he was a Hillary Clinton supporter, not a Bernie Sanders supporter. So the Bernie Sanders wing of the party is probably not as enthusiastic about Obama as they would be others. And when it comes to Republicans, Obama certainly infuses a certain level of dislike that could drive them to the polls. I think it's one of those things that remains to be seen. The enthusiasm gap between Republicans and Democrats right now is pretty significant. There's a lot more energy on the Democratic side, and that's driving a lot of enthusiasm both for primary candidates. They've had mixed results, though, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the New York election last week where Cynthia Nixon was challenging Andrew Cuomo to the left. Stafford Teachout was running for attorney general. Both of the left-wing candidates in that case lost,
that's
and the
true.
More moderate Democrats won. So, we'll we'll have to see how this ultimately plays out. I think you're going to get a mixture at the end of the day in Congress. It's going to make it very difficult if Nancy Pelosi ends up as Speaker to figure out how to govern that body, because you're going to have very different approaches from those who want to take a more centrist tact to those who want to go very much in the socialist direction.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I've heard commentators say that this midterm election is the most important midterm election in our lifetime. Is that just kind of the rhetoric that you hear, or is this one really, really important?
You usually hear that every 2 years whenever there's an election. So no doubt the next presidential election will be the most important in our lifetime. I think it is partially rhetoric.
Yeah.
Look, this midterm election there are significant consequences, though, because President Trump no doubt would be facing impeachment if the Democrats take control. I was at the Congressional Black Caucus conference in Washington, D.C. last week. I heard Maxine Waters speak. Al Green was there. These are two members of Congress who are both calling for impeachment of Trump. In fact, Al Green is calling for impeachment of Trump regardless of whether he's committed any crimes. He was making the case that you should impeach him regardless of that. He should just be impeached because he doesn't like the guy.
Yeah.
So there is a group that's going to be pushing that. And so for that reason, I think, yeah, there are big stakes at play here for the American people when it comes to the midterm election.
Rob, you make my Tuesdays happy. Thank you so much for coming on the program and being such an outstanding guest always.
Thank you, Bill, and we are grateful for your listeners and their support of the Daily Signal.
Fantastic. Rob Bluey has been my guest, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com to check it out. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
Together, experiencing not just information, but transformation.
Well, I've been painting for about 17 years now. So I've been listening probably for 17 years. A lot of times I have it on in people's homes and people say, what are you listening to there? They're intrigued sometimes. And that opens up opportunities for me to share a little bit about my faith and the gospel message that's given me an opportunity not only to share my faith, but also sometimes to stop and pray for people.
Faith Radio.
It is 28 minutes after the hour. I love that, Rob Bluey. We've got a great second half of this hour coming up. Laura Lynn Hughes is going to be with us. She's a mother of five and grandmother of eight. And she's written a book called Choose Zoe, a story of unplanned parenthood and the case for life. She's going to be a great guest. We're going to take a little break and then bring on Laura Lynn Hughes to the program. Be back in a minute. Your Greek. Do you know what the Greek word Zoe means? I'll give you a hint. It means life. That's more than a hint. That's actually the answer. And it refers to the abundant life Jesus came to give us, as referenced in John 10:10. Choose Zoe is a book written by Laura Lynn Hughes, who's my guest on our studio line. Hi, Laura Lynn. How are you?
Hello, Bill. I'm great.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
You have such an easy name to remember because my two oldest sisters are named Laura and Lynn.
I love it.
I do, too.
I love it.
Yeah. So what a great book. What a powerful story. You were pregnant at 15 and chose to keep your child, and life was never going to be the same, was it?
Absolutely not. It's been better than I could have ever imagined.
So tell me why you prompted to write Choose Zoe.
Well, like you said, I was pregnant at 15, and that kind of drove me to helping out at our local pregnancy center. And here in California, within 1 month, I had come across three 12-year-old pregnant girls. The last one was 13, but she was pregnant at 12, and wow. I just went home and cried out to God. I was just in tears, and I said, God, I know I'm helping one-on-one, but I need to help in a greater way. Please, you know, teach me how to help in a greater way. And I went to sleep that night, and I woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I think that's when the Holy Spirit wakes you up, and I begin to write. And so he's really the one responsible for, you know, for the idea of Zoe. Obviously, mm-hmm. he sent Jesus to provide that to us all.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about living a Zoe life. What does that mean?
Well, I think it means living that abundant life.
Okay.
When you look at you look at that life that Jesus died to give us, it was a full, abundant life. And I see a lot of people underliving, and especially when it has to do with any of their pregnancies or pregnancy losses. And when I just started looking at, you know, our pregnancies and what that means, and for me, my children, and especially my grandchildren, are the greatest example I have of living the Zoe life. So it's those things that really, you know, cause us to be vital and have a zest for living, and just an unrivaled, superabundant life is what Jesus came to give us.
Mm-hmm. Now, Laura Lynn, when you were 15 and you had a daughter, what was her name? What is her name?
Erica.
Erica. Okay.
Erica.
So you're sitting there at age 15, just with little Erica in your arms, and I don't even think you've got your driver's license yet. So what is that like?
I got my driver's license when I was very largely pregnant at 8 months old. So it was right about the same time. And I don't know, I knew I was meant to be a mother. Like, that's the one thing. I believe it's a calling to be mm-hmm. a mom, and we can accept it and embrace it and enjoy the blessings, or we can reject it. And so at 15, during the pregnancy, my love for her just grew and grew and grew. So when I held her in my arms, like, she helped me get over a terrible relationship. Like, she was the prize for all of the hardships I went through, you know, having to leave my school and just all the pain that I went through. I always had her in my arms. And I always feel like it's the love that comes out of life that, you know, really helps us to get through everything in life.
Mm-hmm. So when I look at all the clinics that are out there today, they're not all created equal, are they?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So maybe our listeners would be could be wiser if we understand some of the real clinics and the fake clinics.
Absolutely. So real clinics are technically what Planned Parenthood and NARAL have dubbed as abortion providers, and they have uniquely called the pregnancy center and clinics that have life-affirming options, they have dubbed us as fake clinics. So to me, a fake clinic I'm proud to serve in, and we offer very real help to women and men and the babies and the children. So we have a lot of options at the so-called fake clinics.
Mm-hmm. So did you decide to volunteer at NARAL?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Now,
I've never heard of them.
Okay, but isn't that a pro-choice organization?
Yes, it is. And because with the pregnancy center, I go into schools and I teach fetal development and some other life-affirming, you know, options and choices. And so I had heard that there was a sexual education going into the schools,
mm-hmm.
and I was really curious about it. I'd only heard about Planned Parenthood. I'd never heard about NARAL, and I didn't know they were in charge of all the abortion laws and things. So I called because I really wanted to get my hands on what they were teaching in the schools.
Okay.
And I asked a lot of questions, and I said, I'm a prevention girl too. You know, I was pregnant at 15, and the more I talked, the young lady on the other line, she just said, you know, something is telling me that I should have you come and volunteer, because the luncheon was very expensive. I was not going to put any money into that industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I ended up, kind of curiosity
Yeah. And then Laurelyn, you also became a keynote speaker at a Planned Parenthood event. I'd be curious to hear how that went and tell us about that experience.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun, being a pro-life person from birth, practically, yeah. You know, and then going in and speaking at a pro-choice or pro-abortion event. I really felt like I had the desire to go in, but I didn't want to go in under any kind of pretense, and I didn't know why I wanted to go in. And I said, God, if you want me in Planned Parenthood, if this is a desire you're putting in my heart, you're the one that's going to have to make it happen. And a few days later, I got a call, and I was asked to be a keynote speaker. I'm also a photographer in town, so I was offered to be able to photograph their event, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I kind of grappled with it, and I asked my pastors, and I asked a couple best friends for prayer, and the pregnancy center director. And they were all affirmed, if you're going in to share the gospel, you got my blessing. Go ahead and go for it. So I used that opportunity to share my own teen pregnancy, how Jesus Christ came into my life and made everything good. And I just used that opportunity to share Jesus.
I think that's fantastic. So, Laurelyn, when you, after years of experience and after being a mother at 15, I'm curious as to the kind of advice and how you would go about with tone and everything talking to a woman who is considering an abortion.
That's easy, and I get to do that a lot. So I think the thing is she deserves to have all the education she can have. She deserves to know all of her options, to have that time to consider what her concerns are, you know, whether she doesn't know who the dad is or whether she's just looking at, you know, not being able to tell people or that she can't go to college, things like that. Like, she deserves somebody to sit down and talk things out with her. And that's, you know, the best thing is to be a listening ear. When somebody can calm down enough to find peace and to silence all those outside voices, which could be negative, then she's able to really look inside and be able to think about what this means for her. It's also very important to be able to show her fetal development. When a girl usually finds out, she's able to see the little heartbeat on the ultrasound, and that's powerful to be able to, you know that there's life growing within her. But I think it's just being there with her. Being there with her, she's important. We don't make decisions for her. She makes her own decisions. But I want her to make decisions she can live with,
mm-hmm.
to really look at what this means. You know, not only for her, for the life of the baby, for the young man involved.
That was going to be my next question. How many young women come in and feel a tremendous amount of pressure from the boy/man?
That's interesting. It's a lot. But what's changed in the last, I'd say, about 5 years is it's a lot of times uniquely the mother now who's bringing their daughter in or who's doing some coercion, because I think we're coming off of a lot of generation of women who have had abortions, and so sometimes they offer that to their own daughter. So that's even more surprising recently. But we do have young guys come in, and we have different services, too, where we can, you know, be able to help the young guy out on what it means to be a dad, how he can come along and support. So there is coercion, both by a boyfriend, the girl's own mother, sadly.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that does not get discussed as much as it should is post-abortion trauma. I think the young women that get abortions are pretty much told that this is going to give them the freedom and life that they want, and there's going to be good times ahead. And that's not at all the case. And I would love for you, if you would, Laurelyn, to talk about some of that post-abortion trauma.
Definitely. Well, you know, freedom sometimes costs you. And in the case of abortion, sometimes you don't realize. And everyone is different. Everyone's level of, you know, what they can handle in life and how they process. Everyone is different. And so for those who do come for help, for post-abortive help, what's been very common is they may have addictions. They may have a Pentecostal mom personality, or they may be detached from children, future children, and a husband. There's definitely depression in children, which I'm most concerned about. There's like about a 6-time higher suicide rate, and suicide's just something that's touching all of us now in this, you know, in the recent years. And so when you look at all the different statistics, and you can see them like on the Elliott Institution, you just can't deny all of the voices, you know. You can't deny it. There's too many men and women in our own churches, in our own families, who do regret the decision of abortion. And it's just very interesting to see them come in and discuss it and apply the Word of God to it. And their whole countenance changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the end of a 10 or 12 week series, they're lighter, they're freer. They have a new level of openness and love.
Yeah. You know, Laura Lynn, when we talk about today and technology, I'm just trying to turn the clock back to the day you were 15 and you were pregnant. What did you go through? What counseling did you get? What were you told? What technology was available then?
The technology was the Bible and my parents. My mom and dad were definitely pro-life and was raised in a Roman Catholic school, church, and family.
Mm-hmm.
And my father had the whole Imago Dei thing down.
Okay.
You know, in Genesis 1:27, how
sure.
We're all created in God's image. So he felt like babies are a blessing to be embraced. And I had my baby in 77, right after Roe v. Wade was 73.
Okay.
My parents were already, you know, doing some marches, and my dad would write pro-life articles, letters to the editor and things. And they started a pregnancy clinic in our town. And my mom has been involved with that. She's in heaven now, but my mom was involved in that. And so abortion wouldn't have been a thing we would have thought about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, you would either place your child for adoption or you would parent.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't many single parents at the time. I was the only one in my school. That was very difficult.
Uh-huh.
And that was probably one of the hardest parts for me. You know, thank God I had a really strong family.
Yeah, your family.
And I had one of the priests.
Your family was
wonderful.
Living out their pro-life values for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And now, you know, a lot of families, a lot of children now don't have that. So that's where the pregnancy center comes in. And hopefully the church will come alongside the pregnancy centers too, because that is our new stomping ground for, you know, the modern day orphan and widow.
Mm-hmm.
Is the young moms who are in a crisis pregnancy.
Yeah. Laura Lynn Hughes is my guest. She's author of a book called Choose Zoe. Also co-founder of a movement of love post-abortive ministry. And she was pregnant at age 15 and knew her life would never be the same. And in fact, that's the case. We'll take a short break and we'll come back more with Laura Lynn Hughes. If you have a question for her, please call 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in just a minute. Minutes until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold talking to Laura Lynn Hughes. She's written a book called Choose Zoe, a story of unplanned parenthood and the case for life. Laura Lynn, I think churches are doing a pretty good job of coming alongside the pro-life cause. I would probably say that we could always use more churches being involved, but why is it important to help pastors understand the pro-life cause and get involved?
Well, we have people in our congregations. You know, the statistics are about 60% of women who, at the time of their abortion, they would attend church about once a month, identify themselves as like Protestant or Catholic. And so even women in our churches are still aborting to this day. So it's very important in that aspect, and also the post-abortive act. Many women and men in the church are hurting and need healing, and the church is the proper place to be healed. A lot of churches are not involved. I think what they've done is they have pulled out thinking it's a political issue, but it's really a spiritual and biblical issue. And when you look at the story of the birth story of Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, it's quite easy to bring it back into the pulpit because we can just look at that like a modern day crisis pregnancy and think about, you know, how Joseph was about to put Mary away, and the angel came and said, don't be afraid, and actually marry her. And many, many things happened. Our whole faith begins with an unplanned pregnancy. And so when pastors can kind of wrap their mind around that, well, then they're able to just, you know, really kind of realize there are some political dimensions of abortion, but they're able to put it into more of a spiritual and biblical issue. So it's kind of deprogramming the church.
Mm-hmm. Laura Lynn, I have a question from a caller. She said, how would you respond to a woman who says she can do what she wants with her body?
Oh, there's a great story in my book about that. It's a real life story. I hope she reads it. And she used her real name. Her name's Tiffany. So caller, please look at Tiffany's story. But it, you know, it's wonderful. You have to let people live. You have to let them think. And most have been, you know, to college, and it's more of a, you know, a liberal society. And we do think it's the woman's body and therefore her right. So I just listen to people, but it is nice to be able to see where they're coming from. And then also to help them to understand that the baby is a unique living human being with inside of their body, with its own blood type, its own fingerprints. And, you know, the more knowledge someone has, they kind of quit repeating the world's rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. I like that. So I would like to go back to age 15, and you've got baby Erica in your arms. And now Erica's a wife and mother of four. And my first question is, what do you like better, being a mom or a grandma?
Grandma.
why did I know the answer to that question?
That is the Zoe life on steroids right there. When you have a grandchild come in and just, you know, it's a Hallmark commercial as they run across to you, and the amount of love, it's like your heart is going to grow out of your chest. You don't have any more room.
Uh-huh.
So I can think of not a better place to be than with my little grandbabies. I adore them.
Well, talk about Erica and her life a little bit. What is she doing now? And does she know the heaviness that, I mean, you had and faced at age 15 and the options that, you know, you could have taken but chose not to?
She definitely does after all of this book writing. She's my greatest fan. She's just fabulous. She's my greatest fan. She has her master's in school psychology. She stepped down in our district after 13 years, and now she works at a hospital with clinical patients for psychology. And she also, this is so exciting, is the new director at our pregnancy center in Napa, California. And that is really exciting because now it's my mother, myself, a couple sisters, two of my daughters, and the grandbabies are being trained up in the pro-life movement, too.
Mm-hmm. So are there any recommendations for churches to cultivate in their church a place where families can be together on this subject and work through it together?
Absolutely. I would start with that, the nativity story.
Okay.
And be able to just see the uniqueness of a human being and how, you know, it's really an opportune time to be able to evangelize and disciple a young person, you know, that's pregnant and the boyfriend coming alongside of them. For the church to embrace them is, you know, really wonderful. There's so many things you can do for a young lady. You can throw a shower for her because she already feels shame and guilt to not want to come into the church. So just wrapping yourself around her and realizing, like, this is definitely a time for evangelism, it's a time for discipleship, it's a time for mentoring,
mm-hmm.
and when you do that, your church will fill up fast.
Yeah, I would say, Laura Lynn, that attitudes have changed considerably in the church over the last two or three decades on this subject.
They definitely have, And I would like to see a whole lot more conversation going on. In the Catholic Church, they do pretty well on post-abortive care also. But in the Christian churches, I would like to see pastors learn how to have some post-abortive ministries in their church the way that our church has.
Mm-hmm.
It's proven to be very beneficial. And the name of it is A Movement of Love, which is, you know, God's movement of love toward his people to want them to be healed. God didn't just come and send Jesus for us to be saved, but also healed and living that Zoe life.
So if I'm wondering what I can do to get involved in the pro-life movement, maybe you could offer a couple of suggestions or a place to start or something to consider or pray about just to be involved.
Definitely. There's all kinds of pregnancy centers all over the U.S. There's a place in my book at the back where you can find out one near you in case someone near you is in crisis. But we always need volunteers. Financial giving is great.
Mm-hmm.
You can drop off some diapers, you know, and some formula for us. Getting involved, coming to some of the annual banquets is very helpful. But giving up your time is really important. You know, if you're older and you've got something to say and you can come alongside of someone in crisis, it makes a real big difference.
Okay. We just have a couple of minutes left, Laura Lynn, so maybe you could talk to the listener today who's had an abortion in their past, and you could give them some counsel and maybe some, you know, encouragement as to how they could live the Zoe lifestyle now.
Absolutely. Well, I just want you to know that God is not mad at you. He's madly in love with you, and he wants to see you healed and restored. So no matter what we've done in our life, abortion is very intimate because it's within our own body and it's our own child. But there's all kinds of things that we have brought to the altar, and this one is not too big for God. There's nothing, absolutely nothing, that can separate us from the love of God. And I would like to hear your story. I know attached to an abortion is also a relationship problem. And I would like to see you be able to just put that in your past and live free. There's so much hope for you in the future. Once you receive healing, you can help so many other women and men who have been through this. And I know it's scary, and sometimes you don't want to tell your mom or your husband or your now children. But at the pregnancy centers, you can come in. And it's confidential. Everything is confidential. So if any of this has struck you today, I did not mean to rip a Band-Aid off. I would like to be able to continue to help you to find healing and wholeness. So you can even go, like, to the website, choosezoe.com, and I will personally find a way for you to be connected where you can receive healing and hope in your own town.
You are kind and compassionate, Laura Lynn Hughes. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
Yes, Laura Lynn Hughes has been my guest. She's author of a book called Choose Zoe. Thank you for being on the program. We're going to take a short break and wrap up hour one in just a minute.
Each day, together, growing in our faith.
Faith Radio has been a game changer in my life. For our whole family, I tell everybody I know about it. It's encouraging. It's uplifting. Every single day, change the trajectory of our family's life. Honestly, it has been a source of comfort, a source of direction, a source of inspiration, a source of learning every day.
Faith Radio.
It is a couple minutes until the top of the hour, and as you know, at sundown, the Yom Kippur starts. So coming up in the next hour, Tom Berkowitz, who is a Bible teacher and believer, is going to be with us, and he's going to talk about Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, its meaning, its significance, why God instituted this holiday for his people. We'll see you in about 3 minutes. Be back. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.